begins and in chapter 4. Philippians and chapter 4. I think we'll read from verse 8, though we want to deal with verse 11, but the words of verse 8 are so very, very precious. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. Those things which ye have both learned, and received, and heard, and seen in me, do, and the God of peace shall be with you. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly, that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein ye were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned, in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound everywhere, and in all things. I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me. May the Lord bless the reading of his precious word to all our souls. I would like this afternoon, by the Lord's help and by the help of his gracious Holy Spirit, to look with you at those lovely words. I have learned. Now, when I quote that verse to you, I don't want you at any moment to think that I have learned, but I would like to learn. And I would like to learn this great secret of sweet Christian contentment. Now, in Bathgate Academy, there will possibly be started by this time many school classes, further education at night. Well, if your eye quickly goes down the syllabus, I'm sure that's what they call it, or whatever it is, you'll find that there is nothing on it for contentment. It is something that you don't get at Bathgate Academy, and you don't get it at Napier College, and you don't get it at Heriot Watt, or you don't get that anywhere at all. It is something that is gained in the school of God. It's not a thing you get when you're a novice. It's something you can miss even when you're an old man, but it is something you can gain, and it's one qualification that's better than any other that I know in this whole life. Paul says, I have learned. The word really in the text is, I have been initiated into the sacred secret. So tonight, this afternoon, we're going to be, I trust, initiated into the sacred secret of living. Says someone, but there's some of us much older than you here. I'm quite very well aware of that there are plenty older than me. But I do wish you to understand that you could pass your life and miss the mark. You could pass your life and miss the mark. And possibly the greatest and ultimate that a man or woman can arrive at is Christian contentment. Now I want to go through this with you because this is a very beautiful epistle that Paul wrote. It is not like any of the other epistles. There is so very little censure in it that it is nothing else but sheer pleasure to read through the epistle to the Philippians. Now, I'm quite well aware of the two sisters' problems that are in it, and I do think that that was basically the reason for the writing of that epistle. I know that others think that it was the Judaizers, and others think that it was the gift that was given to him, but I feel rather, that the reason for the writing of the epistles was the division or the feeling that existed between Euodias and Syntyche. But we'll we're not going to even deal with that this afternoon. We're going to really look into this great matter of wisdom. You know, contentment is a thing that's often eludes. Only 5% of people come to the state of contentment. And someone is saying in the meeting, I wonder who the five are in our meeting. Maybe some sort of witness saying, there's not even five in our meeting. Well, sometimes it gets down and whittled down a good bit. But the Proverbs speaks like this in the 30th chapter. And most of the women know the 31st chapter, and if they don't, then they should. That is, they should know it off by heart, and they'll become wonderful women in the mind and will of God. But in the 30th chapter, this is the words of the wise. Give me neither poverty nor riches. That is, if I'm poor, I may be tempted to steal. But if I am rich, then I might get neglectful and I might forget God. So in that passage it is teaching an even level road. That's not one thing or the other, because there are dangers on both sides of the fence. Give me neither poverty or riches. And so that is absolutely true. I want you to see that in this chapter, Paul is speaking and he's saying, I have learned. It wasn't something that he got handed down from Gamaliel. You didn't learn that in Gamaliel's school. It wasn't something he learned from his fellow Pharisees. It was something that he learned after being on the hard road of Christian experience. I do want you to see that it is not something I can learn, and it's not something I can learn from others, and it's not a natural thing. That is, that it's not given to you by instinct. You don't get it down through the blood genes. It is something that is learned only by a child of God in the school of God alone. It is rarely the prize of the middle age, because life is in stages. When you're very young, you want to be very popular and you want to be very well thought of. And when you get to middle age, you like a little sort of feeling of power about you. And when you get to old age, you like a bit of money about you. And these three things are facts, and these three things are true. When you're young, you like to be well thought of, and you like to be very popular. And when you're middle-aged, you like to have a little power about you, which is just vain and just conceit anyway. But when you're old, you feel you need something behind you, and you don't trust God the way that you did in your former days. Well, I do want you to understand that there are snares and difficulties in every stage of life. He says, I know how to be abased. You know, Paul's abasement started on the Damascus Road. You remember the night we preached the next night? That abasement started there from the mighty Pharisee of the Pharisees, the Benjamite, the Hebrew of the Hebrews. What he's saying is this, there was nothing mongrel about my connection. He says there was nothing base about my relationship. I was a pure Hebrew of the Hebrew and a Pharisee of the Pharisee. I was a real scholar. But he says there came a time when God started to abase me. That was the best day of his life. I know people don't think that. Wasn't it a very fine lady in London writing to John Newton of Amazing Grace fame? She wrote to Mr. Newton and gave him all her complaints, and could he prescribe a kind of spiritual potion for her condition. And Mr. Newton wrote back, and I don't know if I would do it, I wish I had the courage to do it, but he wrote back to this lady and said, pray for the grace of penury to come into your life. Mr. Newton saw that until that woman was brought down to be penniless and have nothing, whatever she really trusts in the Lord. How would you like anyone praying that you would be brought down? Well, I wouldn't do it for anyone else. But I do want you to know this, that this abasement of God is capable, and eventually it shall lift you up. You know, when God brings you down, it really is to raise you up. And when God empties your coffers, it's to make you more dependent. And when God blights you in your life and in your health and in your family, it's to bring you closer to Him and to wean you away from everything else of this world. God wants your heart to himself. I, the Lord, your God, am a jealous God. Isn't that what God is saying to Abraham? Take now thy son, thine only Isaac, whom thou lovest. He was beginning to love the blessing more than the blesser. And he was beginning to love his son more than his God. Therein lies the sad case of the most of us. Not you. The most of us. There's a love that's greater than love to our God and love to the blessed Lord Jesus Christ. Ah, the dust of Damascus, I know how to be abased. But the dung basket of Damascus, ah, the dust outside Damascus, but the dung basket as he was put over the wall. You remember they were going to take his life, and I was let over the wall in a basket. It wasn't a closed basket, and it wasn't a fisherman's basket. It was the awful basket, and Paul got in it. And in the next chapter, he's taken right up into the third heaven. Oh, he was a beast. But God raised him and gave him visions. Things that he said were unutterable. May God in mercy give us to see that our sadnesses and the seeming plagues of our life and the things that really get us down, these things are intended of God to entrench us deeper into his love. Not ever to forsake him for one of our own vain, conceited notions. My dear friend, Paul knew how to be abased. Not only so, he had the dust of the Damascus Road, that got past, and then he had that terrible experience, that clever scholar in the dung basket. But all his life, take this kindly, all his life he was distrusted by the apostles. Or say someone, but I could give you a verse that says, they gave unto Barnabas and I the right hand of fellowship. I know that. But you know, their hearts were never with Paul. Their hearts were never with the light that God gave them. They were always encircled round about their own little cocoon in Jerusalem, and they never got out of it. The persecution took other poorer Christians to take the gospel further, but they never got out. Say Jerusalem, and when Paul started taking the gospel to all these dark, unknown parts, they were always in doubt about him. Will he go too far? Ah, my friend, you see the point? They were always distrusted by the apostles. I'm not saying they showed it openly, but they really distrusted him, lest he should go too far. They could have kept it within the confines of Judaism. And the law and Moses are going occasionally to the temple and to the synagogue, all very well, but not to the school of Tyrannus, not outside the camp. Keep the gospel inside the camp. But the gospel was established outside the camp. So, my friend, I speak this to you. That man knew how to be abased. We will not go through the list of 2 Corinthians. Desolation and abasement of the present. The sowing, I was going to say there, the sowing of mailbags, like some of our good brethren during the war, and for their conscience sowing their bags in the presence. I tell you this, there wasn't a more debasing job than being a tent maker in a little shop, sitting over it day and night, and a man that could have taken guineas a lesson from all the students. That's me way back to the old money again. You'll forgive me that one. He could have taken guineas a lesson, but what did he do? He just kept sewing away at the tent making. Debased. I'm going to ask you a wee question. If you've got your ticket on the wall and your plaque and you were bound and capped, would you like to go back to tent making? Would you? Was there someone that beneath me where Paul says, I know how to be abased. One day he wrote to the brethren, he's writing to Timothy rather, and he says, the cloak that I left at Troas with Paphos bring, and the book shall be special. Man to whom the world owes the most, I'm talking about after the manner of men, had another coup to change in his mind. Say this, I wish I'd known it and heard about it, for I would have sent one away to him. That man knew how to be up the east. The winter was approaching, and he felt the cold. And such was that man, he knew how to be up the east. Let us come down just a little further. He says, I know how to abound. I know how to abound. He not only knows when things get him down and he's down, he knows how to behave in that situation. But he says, I know how to abound. Lots of people just, what do we say here? We just grin and bear it, and we put on a good step up a bit, and when we're a page, we just stick it out. That's not what I'm preaching. That's not what I'm preaching. Oh, there's a beast. He says, I know how to abound.
He wrote 14 epistles. I'm giving him the credit of Hebrews.
He wrote 14 epistles.
Yet, never once was ever noted of the contribution ever made in our soul.
I tell you this. If some of us could preach 14 real sermons, we would be over the moon about it. But 14 epistles like his, that all the world has hung on these words, I know they're God's and I know it's the Spirit, but what a contribution! Some people, because God has gifted them and graced them, you can hardly live with them, and you can't approach them, and you can't talk rationally to them. And you would never think about talking about your ailing child to them, or anything like that.
Or even how to abound. Is it not true that he covered confidence? Is it not true that he established churches?
He wrote to the churches of Galatia. I know that they were easily put off, but he established whole continents of churches. And yet that man knew how to
abound. Not only so, he raised churches. That's good. In God glorifying ways. We talk nowadays about just keeping the meeting going. And strengthening the things that do remain. And all this kind of talk that we have. But that's really, my dear brethren, really. Oh, don't get me wrong, but really. Really, we've missed a mark altogether.
We've missed the mark and the reason for why we are as we are. We'll never get any bigger. We'll never get any better because we've lost the vision that God in mercy meant that in every village and every hamlet there should be two or three gathering to the Lord's name. Now we have amongst us those that are talking about a mother church and we'll all gather together into one centre. That never was divine intention at all. The villages, the towns, the cities.
Because of our limited vision of divine things. But Paul, he knew how to abound. He says everywhere. Among the Jews, oh, how delicate they had to walk. They were very, very touchy.
Among the Greeks, oh, how learned they were. They had to watch them as well. The Greeks, the Jews, and the Greeks. And not only so, everywhere, the Romans. And then the Cretans, and then he knew how to behave when he was in Malta, when he was shipwrecked on the boat. How did he behave himself? Well, among the Jews, there wasn't his equal. And the Greeks, well, Marcel tells you how he behaved there. Do you know when they were taken to Marcel, they looked at the little man and they say, what will this paddler say? To Paul, what will this picker of seeds say? What will this picker up of crumbs say? And if you come up with something that was nonsensical, they just slew you there and then.
Paul knew how to behave before the Jews.
That time when he's between the Pharisees and the Sadducees are arguing the point, Paul says, for the hope of the resurrection, how do I stand in custody today? And how he divided that company, and how he brought himself to freedom. What wisdom he used amongst the Jews.
Of faithfulness amongst those Greeks who those feats of knowledge and literature, those feats of statues and culture.
He says, who are you ignorantly worship? Imagine telling a cultured, learned and man he's just an ignoramus.
Now I know you people in Armadale would have very finer ministry than that, and you wouldn't trap on anybody's toes, but listen! Paul said to those learned people, whom ye ignorantly worship, he says, where your philosophy has ended, I'm starting. Their philosophy ended in the unknown God. He says, him declare I unto you. Always remember, Christianity has nothing to do with Judaism, and Christianity has nothing to do with human philosophy. It stands alone and supreme and distinct from every other thing that's ever been known. It's not a mixture of any of these things. It stands alone and supreme as Christ is. Everywhere. He says, I know how to be full. What he's saying is this, that when I'm full, whether it be of joy, or whether it be of accomplishment, or whether it be of things material, he says, I know how to carry that. I know how to behave myself when I am full.
I remember a lesson that another gave to me just dead this year, Mr. Alec West. He used to fish in the Beer Eddy, a boat there, and he did awful well. But he told me a very striking little thing that I thought was awful telling, and it helps me in my preaching to know these little bits, because it helps you in your preaching to know that you would make up a few things.
He said that when he had a big catch, and the boat was well weighted down, he said they all would hung about and wait until just about breakfast time, when everyone was in the harbour, and he would be sailing in a big boat full of fish, so that everyone would see him coming in.
But he said when they had nothing, he said they seemed hard all the way to get in the dark, so they could tie up. We know how to behave ourselves when we're full, and the sky above is glowing, and around the all is pleasure like a river flowing, all things tending to delight. I'll be with thee, I will be thy sense. It's not been like that. Whenever we've been blessed, whenever we've been full, so living with us, we must rush and get something to wear to show how much we've been blessed. We must give some kind of an outward indication of our fullness, mustn't we? I know how to carry the cup. Contentment's a big question. To be able to carry the full cup of ambition realized. I tell you, he knew how to do it. He says, he knew how to be full and to be hungry. And to be hungry. Of course, we can hardly believe it. All you good, kind-hearted people here that would give anybody their tea. All knew how to be hungry. Wouldn't you love to have given Paul a bite, wouldn't you? I would love to have given Paul his tea. Especially supper if he'd been staying with us. I'm sure her eyes would have been bleary with sleep, but it would have been marvellous, wouldn't it? He says, I know how you. Oh, Paul knew the times of hunger at the pit of his stomach. But he knew how to behave in such ways. Just someone, what was the lesson you think he learned from being hungry? Learn the lesson of absolute dependence on his God. I don't know a lesson, and I don't know a degree that's sweeter than that, as just to wait upon God and just to know God in that way that other people do. It's possibly the sweetest thing of God's holy work. It's just the resting and trusting in God. It's something every Christian should aspire to. And it's something that no Christian should get themselves into a position that they'll never be hungry because they're going to lose out. But says someone, it's 1983.
We're superannuated now. The pension will sort us now. And if that doesn't, then we'll just go and we'll get something else.
Friend, I tell you this, you'll lose some lessons. This lesson of knowing how to be hungry.
I know how to. Many say to suffer
need. And of course the same applies there as well. There may be some people, of course, and they're very well off. Well, say someone, well, it's not an Avondale. Well, you get upset about that. One day my boy said, well, you go to a local farm sale, and we went to the farm sale, and we saw an old boy there, and I wouldn't have given tuppence for his coat if he'd been selling and an old cap. I never saw the likes of it. And the farm was going up for 160,000, and the auctioneer was getting a little bit upset, and the man that was nodding all the time, he just looked like a tramp. And the auctioneer was so excited, he said, mister, do you understand that it'll be cash down? And everyone that was there saw the old boy go into this big long coat and put his hand down it, and he brought out the wherewithal. They don't get excited. I want to speak now to the rich, particularly they that would be rich, because there are people that are rich and they can carry it, and oftentimes they're unaffected by it. That's the way they've been born, and that's the way they've been reared, and they're not affected by it. But there are people, says Paul, that would be rich, and they bring upon themselves many, many snares, because generally to get rich you forfeit spiritual things, and usually to be spiritual you have to forfeit the other thing. That is a fact. May I suggest this to you? Never be envious of the rich.
Because they're not always happy. To someone, but I would like to be a bit better off than I am. And I tell you this, God has measured your way. And God knows every breath you draw. And He knows every faculty of your being. And He tempers everything just to keep you as you are, and to keep you on your knees, and keep you praising, and keep you humble, and keep you from temptation. The rich have many, many temptations.
There's not very many of them. Terribly. Alexander came after nearly conquering half the world. He says, is there no more master?
Haman was made second to Ahasuerus over 127 provinces. And you know this, he saw a little man sitting at the gate. And all that he had couldn't satisfy what he didn't get. There was a little man there that wouldn't nod to him, wouldn't give in. Oh, I like these kind of people. You know, I could just have nodded at least. Just a wink would have done, wouldn't it?
He incriminated all God's people because he wouldn't bow down to him, the son of the Eliakim. He says to his wife, I'm made second in the land. I've got big estates. I've got servants. There's always something missing. That goes in for these kind of things. Oh, I tell you, young and old, you've wasted your life. As long as that little man wanted you, I sat in the gate. He was unhappy. Listen, you go in for these things, there's always something eluding. There's always some shadow you're grasping at. There's always some pot of gold at the end of the rainbow that you never can get to. It's a wearying kind of life. Without this sweet contentment, that all speaks to you. Here's another little one.
There's someone, well, I'm glad I'm not in that. You know, you're in a coy way that we talk. Well, I'm glad I'm not in that class. And you're preening yourself a little bit. Well, there's two kinds of good people.
There's the Lord's poor and there's the devil's poor. There are rowers that the Lord keeps rowing, because he knows that that's the best way for them. And there's the devil's crew, with their habits, with their drink, with their ways. The devil has made them tempted. Oh, listen. Listen to Paul. I have learned through thick and thin. I have learned through want and plenty. I have learned. I have come to the secret. I've got the key. I've got the key to happiness. Whether I'm among Jews or Greeks or Maltese, it doesn't matter. Whether I'm in Jerusalem, in Corinth, in Athens, in Rome, I have learned, in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I want to really bring this home to us just for a moment, especially to all of our hearts. Our blessed Lord, while he was here, would be the most industrious of all men. What I'm saying is this, that anything the Lord did would be done there. There'd be nothing shoddy about it. The price would be right. And there would be no polyfill. In all the Lord's journeys, they called him a blasphemer. They called him a Samaritan. They called him an imposter. They called him various things. But there never was one from Galilee ever said this. You turned off that yoke you made for me. That yoke galled my beast. That yoke skinned my beast. But his yoke is easy. And his burden is like the blessed Lord. When he was here, there was none wrought so industriously like Christ. But when he went to preach after Jesus being about 30 years, when he went to preach, he had a penny to his name. Says he to Peter, show me. Oh, I know the idea of the superscription. I know all that about that passage. But he hadn't a penny of his own to produce. But look at him. What contentment marks that blessed man. Nazareth. Well, here's a question. Would you stay in Nazareth? Just someone, but wait a minute. I'm only asking you a question. Would you stay in Nazareth? Where they come from? They're all right, but they come from. I tell you, my dear friends, he lived there not only 30 years, he spent a lot of years in Egypt, but he spent the most of his life in Nazareth. I never ever read that ever he whined or ever complained. I never read as if the house was too small, or the furnishings were not bright, or the decor. Oh, I never read anything like that. Oh, Christ, you know why? Because Christ never mentioned once what people in our meetings talk 10,000 words about. Things that engage our language and our tongues never once cross the lips of the Lord Jesus. Mentioned this morning, you touched my two of them. It was all his. And all the gold and all the silver's mine. And it was all his as the Son of Man. He had the title deeds to the whole earth. Some of our coaching will leave their inner blood box. Well, keep them there, they'll be handy when you come to write your will and things like that. But remember this, it's not yours. Everything belongs to someone. Oh, I tell you, so I feel ashamed even at trying to let these things before you. Ever of two is the design of God.
then God has got great supplies of grace to minister to us, isn't it? Oh, says someone, I would love to be like Paul. I would love to be like the preachers. Would you? You wouldn't really, would you? You know, when I went preaching at first, I thought every likely young man I would encourage him to go preaching. I don't encourage anybody now at all. Or say someone, you're all unbalanced. I'm not. This man is a giant. Why? Because he has got the secret. His happiness is not derived from things. His happiness is not derived from who he knows, or where he goes, or what circle he's friendly with. Oh, come today. Your friends were taken away. Your livelihood was taken away. All that you think is dear is taken away. Paul didn't live in meeting life like you and me. Just someone did he not attend the meetings. He did every time he could, but he couldn't. He spent half of his Christian life in the jail. How did he get on? You've got it all here. You don't need to ask me. It's all here. It breathes Christ. It breathes God's presence. It breathes the fullness of the Holy Ghost. Why? Because you realize that self and self-will and all these things bring a man to spiritual beggary. That's why we are the way we are. That's why we're so weak. It's because we're trying to ride two horses at one time. We're trying to be Christ-like and worldly at the same time. We want to please God and yet please the neighbors. Little do we know, or little do we understand. There's only one thing that really matters. That is the soul. If someone, I would be an enigma. I would be old-fashioned. People would fight at me.
Tell you this, my friend, if you love the Lord, you're not going to heaven, will you?
Whether you break bread or not,
your love of the world, your love of the world is not. You will come to this. Look, I never saw anybody else with you. Maybe you're wishing it was all finished. Oh, that's right, my friend, and we would love to be so. My mind is running of your own. I remember when Joy O'Gill was very small, and I had all these ladybirds to read to her, and I believe I could have used the ceremony of these ladybirds. I remember the manger, Ace of Stables, I find. You know what I mean? The door in the manger and things like that. But the one that's just coming to my mind there is that the one of all the people, the man with the one leg and the other one was blind and the other one with the other ailment, and they all get together. They all begin to commiserate with each other. And one says, I wish I had yours. The other says, I wish I had yours. And I wish I had that. I would be so unhappy. Fingers over in the table. So I knew the that sense in which you know God in a way that I. People in this room, God, you know God, very, very special. Whether it's in family trial, whether it's in business trial, whether it's domestic, industrial, personal, I don't know, I'm not going into that, that's not my business. But what I'm saying is this, they groaned and panted before God for real holiness, and all the circumstances were against. Oh, an almighty way. It's like conversion, you know. I'm not saying it's a second conversion. I don't believe in that. But, oh, that times when God draws near, he really dresses himself with the people of God. As if someone, you've dealt with all that side of a thing, but what about the sufferers? You know, the Jeremiahs of this life, the people that have always got pains, and other people think they're just imaginary. You know, because you don't feel that pain away, how can they be suffering in any way?
And there's people you see are very sensitive, and others have got great minds of steel, and they just strip you off, and they're just imagining it, and things like that. You know, for instance, this lady was just a little bit troubled with her nerves a little bit, and this other lady, she came out of the meeting. And while it was quite comical in a way, she says, oh, she says, when I was your age, we hadn't time to have nerves. We hadn't time to have nerves. I lived in a day when they hadn't time to have nerves. And all these things are really very, very difficult. How can all of us, what could we say, the army of sufferers, to be content? Well, I think Paul more than anyone, for there's none ever suffered like him. Poverty, desertion, whippings, 5 times received I, forsaken of the brethren, betrayed by others, up and down in the deep. There never was any servant of the Lord that passed through such deep waters as that man. And it's that man that appears in Philippians 4 in verse 11. And he says, I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. Have you a difficult home life? Well, may God in mercy help you. For there's nothing sweeter than domestic unity. Have you a tyrant of a person to work with? You have every sympathy that I have in working with people that are difficult people, unmanageable people. You couldn't please them whatever you do. Oh, you need the sympathy of the Lord, and you need the sympathy of God's people. Do you live in the bread line? Then you too need to be prayed for grace to help you as well. Have you factious children? Remember, many of the saints have that as well. Is there difficulties that you have in the meeting? Oh, Paul had them as well. There's nothing, you see, that crosses our path by the writer to this epistle, one way or another. Oh, but says someone, they hadn't marriage problems. How do you know? Oh, says someone, 1 Corinthians chapter 7 teaches us that he was a single man. No, it does not teach us that at all. It speaks about a free state. That's what it speaks about. Maybe in that word, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, would include that terrible thing of desertion of a wife and certainly the disinheritance of the Holy State. Paul had suffered the loss of everything. I wonder if we'll ever get there. I weary myself. I haven't many more years myself now. I weary myself that I might not miss the mark. I might not be taken up with things that are trivial and things that don't count once you come to the realities of life. Paul says, I have learned. Well, none of us would claim to have learned, but I'm sure some of us want to learn. I'm sure some of us want to get to that position where we can cast all our care upon the Lord. And that we can be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, making your requests known